Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for March 2nd, 2023. A few topics to cover tonight. First of all, this is from a listener, an email. Let me pull this up here. And it is a request to talk about the doubles for political candidates. And I noticed this, well, early on, and of course, anybody with half a brain also noticed it. But for example, the Joe Biden who did the final debate with Trump, who was reading scripts literally off a teleprompter, was a double. It wasn't Joe Biden, because Joe Biden at the time was having mental problems, and we're not really sure if the real Joe Biden ever appeared after that, because clearly he was failing. You know, and so also, it's not for certain if this person had, you know, surgery or certainly a lot of makeup, you know, how they, you know, this is, for example, how Hollywood can do this. I remember the George Patton movie, and I forget who the star was that played Patton in the movie Patton. But, I mean, he could have been, for all practical purposes, would have fooled a lot of people that he was George Patton, World War II general. But, you know, the other thing is, if you've seen any of the movies like the Tom Cruise movies, Mission Impossible, where they'll literally pull a mask off and they look just like the other person, or the other person looks just like Tom Cruise, and then they pull a mask off and it's not him. So, you know, there are a few things that they cannot change, and one of them is the earlobes. One of the features that's very difficult to deal with is the earlobes. And that's where one of the main points you could tell. Also, things like forehead. Nobody really, really 100% looks like another person. And that's why, for example, face recognition works, is because you take those various zones of the, you know, you can, the skin on the head is very tight and there's no fat there, you know, especially on the area of the forehead. And so you can see the bone structure, literally, or the eyes, or there's so many things that they cannot change with plastic surgery. Anyway, the listener asked if I could comment about that, and I don't have the email up in front of me, but basically it said thank you for all of your work, and that the first time he had heard about the body doubles for politicians was, I think he was listening to one of my shows, and he was in a foreign country, and also made the comment that that I influence a lot of people who I will never meet. And that's kind of why I also chose to review this email on the air, on the show, because every week, I don't know how many people listen to this show or other shows that I'm on. I'm on, you know, a guest on many national, international radio programs, different venues. And it seems that wherever I go, and this has been going on for many, many decades, that wherever I go, there's seems to be a big, there can be a big following. In fact, it's happened where I would be a guest on what they call ratings nights. So ratings nights would be where they were doing, there's companies that go out and do ratings. And what they do is they call up, they just do random calls and say, hi, you know, what are you, what show are you watching? What are you listening to? And with that, they can get a statistical average of the number of people. Actually, they can do an estimate. And of course, on those nights, the talk show host and the production staff and the producers and the networks want their maximum listenership so that they can, you know, that allows them to say, well, this is what our ratings are. This is the number of people listening, and therefore this is how much you should pay for advertising. Anyway, that's the scoop. But anyway, also not just to get ratings, but to influence people. And so, I hope I'm not considered. I hope I'm not in one of the groups that it's considered dangerous. And there's also a thing about being political, which I'm not really that political. I talk sometimes about political things, but I talk about science. And there's kind of an interesting thing that happens with scientists, especially good scientists, scientists that actually come up with real answers, real solutions, etc., is that they're pretty highly regarded. And so you will, if you go onto the internet and you look up my name, you'll see some places trying to trash my name or something like that. But in the tier one level of science, my name is pretty highly respected, let's put it that way, amongst the people who are real scientists, not the tier two wannabe scientists that work at NASA. And the rule is, if you see their face and name, they are not tier one scientists. That's just the simple, that's the simple rule of thumb, so to speak, on how to identify if somebody is a true tier one scientist. But I'm a little different in that I didn't ever really work on a contract with the government, and I stayed out of that. I stayed independent. So anyway, just a little lead-in from a listener there. And a second listener, might as well get this in before I forget it, has been asking about the Colbrin and the imitation Colbrins. So the Colbrin is a collection of books. Let's just say exactly what it is. And some people call it the Colbrin Bible, but it's really not a Bible. It's a collection of books that came from the historically very profound library of Joseph of Arimathea. Joseph of Arimathea was a rich, very wealthy businessman in old Rome at the time of Christ, and he also happened to be the uncle of Mary. So he was Christ's great uncle, and he spent a lot of time with Christ, and he was the guy, because in old Roman law, you had to claim a body after a death, you had to be a family member. And so after the crucifixion, he went to Pontius Pilate and asked if to have the body of Christ, where they took it, of course, and then the women, anointed the body and all of the things they did, and then they put it in the tomb, and they had they rolled this big rock up there on the door so nobody could get in or out. And of course, when they went there on Easter Sunday, the rock had been moved. The garments that they had wrapped Jesus in were folded up neatly on the bench, and he was gone. And they're like, "Whoa, what's going on here?" So they're afraid. They go back, and as they're walking down the path, he appears to them. He goes, "Hi, I'm okay." And they're like, "Uh-oh." So they go back to where all these people are huddled, the very first, the apostles and the Christians and Mary Magdalene and Mary the Mother, where they were all huddled in this place because they were afraid, of course, because they were followers, in some cases relatives or the mother of Christ. And so they were all kind of huddled down and, you know, afraid that the Roman army was going to come and drag them and crucify them next. And they go back there and they say, "Wow, you know, I'll tell you what, this guy is not there and he's risen and we saw him." And the word got out, and then the apostles are walking down the road. This is a ways away now. And he appears to them. He goes, "Hi, I'm. And they all saw this guy die. And back in old Rome, the Romans knew how to kill people. There was no error in the death of Christ. When they say he's dead, believe me, he was dead. And so that's one thing you can take to the bank, is if the Romans performed the crucifixion and claimed the guy was dead, then he was dead. 100%, take it to the bank, guaranteed. So anyway, Joseph of Arimathea then took Mary the mother and Mary Magdalene and a few other people, and he went to England, where he had, now Joseph, the reason Joseph of Arimathea was rich was he was an Israelite, he was a Hebrew, And he had access to England, the island of England, Britain, as it was called at the time. And the Roman army couldn't go there because the Celts were there, and the Celts would kick the butt of the Roman army, which they did many times. And so the Roman army could not go there, but England was, Brittany was where they got the middle. So all of the military industrial might of Rome, old Rome, depended on their influx of metal from Brittany, and Joseph of Arimathea was the guy that facilitated that. So he was very wealthy. And so Christ was in England, Christ was in the Mideast with him. In India, it is said, they have record of Christ being there. So he spent a lot of time with Christ as Christ was growing up. But anyway, Joseph of Arimathea had a library. It was a library that was to die for, if you want to use a play on words there. And so anyway, he took his library also, and they built the original abbey at Glastonbury. And so eventually the abbey continued, and it was well into, and I'm not going to put a date on this, but it was a long, let's just say this, it was a long time afterwards that the Romans finally penetrated into Brittany far enough to where they got to, and their orders were to burn the library at Glastonbury, which they did. And the, of course, the people curating the library at the time knew that the Romans were coming, so they put as much as they could in wagons and on horses and got them out of there. And then the Romans came and they burned the place down. They destroyed everything in sight. And so the original Colburn, as it was presented, had been kept in a trust for all of those years, and literally hundreds of years. And it bypassed the Catholic Church. It was not held by the Catholic Church. And so the second question of the listener was about the authenticity of the current Bible. And it comes in, the Christian Bible comes in many variations. There are the Dead Sea Scrolls, which give some of the original New Testament documents and shed a different light on some of the passages in the Bible, etc. But at any rate, the Colburn then, I won't give a year on this either, but I'll just say the early 1990s, the Chaldean Trust, there was a secondary trust, or the primary trust, and then the Chaldean Trust was the one that interfaced with the public, and they're the ones that brought the Colburn to me. There were three copies that were brought into the U.S., and it was kind of an interesting, one of those very interesting situations where the historical effort to keep those and then bring those books to light, and there was a man who was keeping those books. And, of course, this was in Latin and Old English, the books, so they were very easily translated very accurately. And that resulted in the publication of the original Colburn, which is now available today. You can get it from Australia, from Goody's Books, and Australia and New Zealand. And so that's where the trust is housed. And I believe I have a link on my webpage to the Chaldean Trust where you can buy it. They also now have an online version, an ebook version, which you can purchase. But I would highly recommend you get the hardcover, which is a magnificent book. And that's the one that was, I had one of the original three copies of that. And they brought it to me. It was very interesting. This is a two-sided story of what was happening here. The Chaldean Trust wanted to get it into my hands, and so that I could interpret what it meant, because clearly there were some passages that dealt with space science and things in the heavens, let's just put it that way. And since I was probably the premier person on the planet that could take this and really understand what it meant, they got a copy to me. At the same time, somebody I knew, an elderly gentleman, had knowledge of these books because his grandma had showed them to him when he, when he was little. And they had been carried through history, parts of them, known as the Book of Britain. And there were some other books that went along with that that had portions of what is now the Colburn. So at any rate, this guy knew about these, and he went on a kind of like a search, a Don Quixote type of search for these books. And at the same time the Chaldean Trust was trying to get them into my hands, he was searching from the United States trying to find the books they connected, and he was able to get three copies. And so if you go onto the internet and you look up the Colburn, it will say on the official page that the Colburn was introduced to the Western civilization through me, myself, and I guess through James McCanney. And so anyway, what happened is I got the book. There were three of them copies. One of them went to a group that did, where they were doing group studies, a group down in one of the southern states, and that's all I'll say about that. But then there was another copy that was held by the guy that was looking for them, and then one copy got to me. So I open up this book, and I go, wow, this is a beautiful book. This is an amazing manuscript. And I open it up, and I start reading. And, the hair on the back of my neck literally stood up, because what they're describing is it's called the rebirth of man. And there were various incidents where large comets came through the solar system and ravaged Earth. And humankind did an absolute number on Earth, and of course, almost mass extinctions. Okay, so anyway, I'm not going to go into that here because I talk about it. It was the spawning point of my book, which was later published, which actually was published in, I think, 2002, called Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. And I've talked about that book where I released it on Coast to Coast, with George Norrie, and it was pre-sold without the title, which is something I did. It was the book that followed my first book for public consumption was Planet X Comets and Earth Changes. Then came Surviving Planet X Passage, which was the second book. And then the third book was the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book. And everybody was expecting another Planet X book, because I had announced, and people were buying the book without actually knowing the title. And so when the title was read on the air on Coast to Coast that night, the sales went into orbit. And that night, I sold $42,000. Those are the good old days. I wish that would happen again when I release a book. But anyway, $42,000 worth of sales that night. And my webpage, my internet provider webpage, had a limit of $5,000. So clearly, they thought that there was something going on, that there was some kind of scam. So they held the money. They said, we won't give any of this money to you till you prove, you print, and fulfill all these orders. Then we'll give you the money. So I had to print and fulfill all of these orders. And when I showed them that data, that the people that actually got the product, printed books, etc., these were back in the print days before ebooks, then they released my money to me, and they raised my limit to $50,000. Anyway, but now what happens to the Colburn is the CIA gets wind of this, and they get they like what I call street people. Street people are low life, nothing. They're kind of like trailer trash, low life street people. And in that case, they got the people to start. They actually started selling Xerox copies. What was that guy's name? Glenn. I forget, I'll think of it in a minute. And then a nerd named Marshall Masters claimed that he wrote the Colburn and started selling a copy along with, this happened a bit later, 2012 and the Mayan calendar and the Colburn, and we were all going to die in Planet X, and started selling this trashed version of the Colburn on Amazon. And I think it's still there. No other bookseller would carry the book, because they knew it was plagiarized 100%. But anyway, do not buy the Colburn on Amazon. And they even have a thing there that if you buy it there, they will not refund your money because they know when you find out you got taken, you would want to send it back and get your money back. And of course, Amazon is a CIA-owned operation by itself. But anyway, so do not order the one that's on Amazon. The copy of the Colburn that you want is through Goody's Bookstore. It's in New Zealand and also available in Australia. But, and I recommend, like I say, I think it's about $100 to get the Colburn. And then I would recommend getting there's a number of other books that go, the Kalady and other books that go along with it. I would recommend getting all of those in print form because it's a very beautiful set of books. And then read it. And then also read my book, The Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection book. Okay, so that's kind of a summary there. And then just a bit of a comment also on the Christian Bible. What happened to these texts that were passed down from basically the Old Testament and then also the New Testament books, the four apostle New Testament books and other New Testament books, etc., is that they, through the ages, they were held by the Catholic Church and they were reproduced in the monasteries a lot of times by hand. Up until the printing press, and the Gutenberg Bible was literally the first book to be printed by a printing press. It was the Gutenberg Bible, the most highly reproduced book in the history of the world. So the Gutenberg Bible, but what happened is that through the ages, the Bible that you see, the Christian Bible today, got changed and modified and watered down, homogenized, blended, and because the people who were holding it really didn't know what it meant. They had no idea what these things, like the Great Flood or the Moses, and just so many things that got changed. Or, for example, where Christ was born was Judea. He was a Nazarene. He was born in Bethlehem, of course, but he grew up in Nazareth. And so they called him a Judean, which has been falsely connected, saying that he was a Jew. He was not a Jew. He was a Hebrew. He was an Israelite, as was Joseph of Arimathea and Mary and Joseph, the father of Christ, etc. The, you know, the what would you call him? The not the biological father, but the basically Mary's husband. And but anyway, they lost my thought here. They these were Israelites, and so they mistakenly, for example, started and this is more modern too, started saying that Christ was a Jew. Well, he was not a Jew. He was from Judea. And that mixing of words, because the idea that all the people from Judea were Jews is simply false. It's the only thing that those words have in common is the first letter J. Apart from that, they have nothing in common. And so there have been a lot of misinformation that has been generated over the ages. And the Bible is has a lot of problems in the way they recount things. The Bible, especially the Old Testament, is primarily a genealogy. That's mainly what it is, with a few major events that helped shape the history of the human race, including the Great Flood and then the Venus event, which I call the Moses event. At any rate, the Christian Bible. So the question is, should you study the Bible? And yeah, you can read it, but you have to understand that a lot of information in the Bible is simply twisted and false and has been changed. The New Testament, however, is fairly accurate, and that's been confirmed also with the Dead Sea Scrolls, a lot of which are original versions of the that were written, some of them a couple hundred years after the death of Christ, but still gives another perspective of things like the resurrection, the crucifixion, and the days around those events. Okay, so at any rate, so should you study the Bible? Of course. It's a very important book, and you, like I say, you have to understand how it sets in history. And then a very important set of works is by Yvonne Whiteman, and she has written some books that are available on Amazon. And so her papers dealing with the Qumran are amazing, very, very amazing work. So I suggest you also take a look into that relative to the Qumran. So the Qumran is not a Bible. It's a collection of books that are remnants of the library of Joseph of Arimathea, who I explained who he is and what his role was in that time frame. Okay, just a quick note on the California natural gas prices going into orbit. Now, here are, they are restaurants that their monthly bill was averaging, in the cases they were talking about on the news, they were talking about restaurants having a $600 a month natural gas bill, when, of course, they cook with natural gas. So they're talking about this Chinese restaurant that the next month it got a bill for $6,000. And so how are they going to stay in business where their, you know, their energy bill went from $600 to $6,000? And, of course, that just puts them out of business. Absolute insanity in the state of California, which is in a state of complete meltdown, destruction, woke by all standards. But anyway, just craziness. And in a lot of other places, natural gas prices are actually going down. So anyway, insanity reigns in California. Let me see here. Oh, before I forget it, let me quick talk about my new book, which is on Amazon, and I am selling on Amazon now. My other books should be on Amazon soon, but there's one book up there now. It's my newest book called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myth, Magic, and Mayhem. So go see that. Just look for my name on Amazon, and you'll find it. And by the way, you may find some of my other books, like The Planet X or the other books, probably all of my other books there, being resold. That's not me selling those, so don't buy them there. In fact, it's rather comical to see people criticizing me there in the blog notes underneath, criticizing me for making money selling books when I'm not even selling the books. There are people reselling my books that claim they have used books. Who knows if they are used or reprinted somewhere. There's a lot of scammery going on Scamazon.com as regarding selling books, etc. But anyway, I am putting my books up there, and they're being professionally remastered, let's put it that way. And so take a look at the new book. Once again, the title, The Real History of Man and Earth, Myth, Magic, and Mayhem. Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. Myths is plural. And so also, just to mention, the MR5 whole house water filters have reduced pricing. So if you've been sitting on the shelf thinking about getting one, I would suggest doing it now. What's going on is we just have a stock reduction sale going on just to clear out some of the stock. I usually keep many, many hundreds of units on hand. And as the economy slows, then the reason for having that many on hand goes away. So we're just going to sell off a little bit of the stock, and when that gets sold off, then the prices are going to go back up to normal. So you can have a big savings on the MR5 water filters. Go to jmccwaterfilters.com, plural, filters is plural, jmccwaterfilters.com, and check out the MR5 whole house water filter. And of course, the other water filters are not on sale, but those typically are constantly selling. Here's the issue. Whenever you get a product that's over, say, $600-$800 or $1,000, the number of sales go down, have been going down, because the economy has just stalled. It's and this is not just me. This is all, if you're Nike or any of the big companies are having the same issue, that they simply were planning on this year being like last year, and they're sitting on too much stock. So I'm just having a little stock clearance sale when I get down to a certain number. So if you're thinking about an MR5, do it now and save some money, because very shortly those prices are going to go back up. Okay, what else? I was going to do, here's a story. Yeah, this is important because this is coming at you, some disinformation. A couple quick stories. The Venus-Jupiter close alignment up in the sky, I think it happened last night, actually. And so go out and look up in the western sky. You'll see Jupiter and Jupiter and Venus. Venus is the brighter of the two, if you have a clear view. And so I believe it was last night when they had their closest approach. But I'm not sure on that, but just keep watching them, because it's kind of fun to see. But it's also proof, 100% positive, I should say 1,000,000% positive proof, that planetary alignments were not the Christmas star. Now, every time Christmas rolls around, which just happened a few months ago, of course, the astronomical community, which is a bunch of paid shills, come out and say that the Christmas star was a planetary alignment. And of course, the thing they want to keep away from is the truth, that it was a very, very unusual comet. And so it was a comet that's been so unusual that it did not happen for thousands of years prior to the birth of Christ, nor for thousands of years after. It was a very unique comet. And my estimation was that it was a triple comet, with a very, very specific, because the wise men all recognized this when they saw it. And the wise men of anybody would be very familiar with planetary alignments. And so it could not have been a planetary alignment, because planetary alignments happen all the time. And specific planetary alignments happen all the time. And so look up in the western sky, you'll see Jupiter and Venus closely visually aligned, not electrically aligned. And so this just happens all the time. So the Christmas star could not have been a planetary alignment. And so, and this is proof. So when you look at it, you go, McCanny's right. Christmas star could not be a planetary alignment, because there's Jupiter and Venus, and it ain't Christmas, and Christ is not being born, even if it were Christmas Day. So, very important. And then also, this morning, I think I'll talk next week about the what's known as the Crew 6 SpaceX launch, etc. But, now here's the topic I want to get to, and that has to do with climate change. Climate change, I saw this, I was unfortunately in a place, and you know how they have the public TVs a lot of times are set to CNN. And airports, no longer that's true, because nobody's watching it. But, you know, you go into other public venues and there's a big TV there, and it's set to CNN. And so I just happened to be there at the time when the Weather Channel, which has been taken over by CNN, and of course CNN is the Candy Nugget News, or some people call it the other names. I call it Candy Nugget News. But it's owned by the CIA. The CIA bought CNN after the first Gulf War, when they realized that George Bush Sr. and the Saddam Hussein were both getting their news from boots on the ground from CNN. So the CIA bought that, and that's when real disinformation in the news media began. Okay, so anyway, understanding that CNN and the Weather Channel and Weather Underground, all of these are now, these weather outlets are owned by the CIA. And so what I saw was that they were announcing, and this is a big announcement, it took them like an hour to present this, that that all of a sudden in upcoming years, because of climate change, there were going to be massive hurricanes in the northern states, and the damage would be northern, going north, and the northern states would be experiencing hurricanes. They would be stronger. And then there was one of the little monkeys there, one of the little meteorologist monkeys, the weather repeaters, making the point down. Now, don't get the idea that they're going to get weaker down by Miami or southern Florida or Louisiana. Don't get the idea they're going to be weaker there. They're going to be stronger there. But they were just saying that there's going to be more hurricanes farther north that are going to be farther inland. There's going to be more wind damage, 80 to 90% more damage. That from instead of 2.5 million houses at risk, there will now be 4.2 million homes at risk, about almost twice as much. And they talked about insurance prices going up. Now people in northern states were going to have to insure their houses for hurricane damage because of this. And then they got some young clown on there that's parroting this whole thing, and they're giving names like Jacksonville and Daytona Beach, where the hurricane damage typically had been less if you look at the overall average. And they're talking about in 30 years climate change. And this is what I discovered was that this was the fear weather channel. Fear weather, we call it fear porn weather channel, right on CNN. And, you know, it's just like this hand waving where all of a sudden the damage would be due to increased hurricanes because of global climate change. And that's, you know, there's no science here. There's no real science being done. This is just people talking. And, of course, this will cause fear and loathing in the insurance industry. So now what are insurance companies going to start to do? They're going to start charging people in northern states for hurricane insurance based on this total disinformation. And so people will be, you know, this is going to cause billions of dollars in loss due to the average person having to pay increased insurance for hurricanes that are manipulated. And so this is the thing. They can now manipulate hurricanes to go into northern states, etc. Okay, so and this also affects, look at all of the various things that it's going to affect. So government, state, local, and federal government, insurance, the cost of food, water, and the cost of transporting that, then, of course, this will lead to more censoring of information, and then political campaigns and woke agendas. So all of these things will be promulgated, bolstered, because of this report, which is a fake report. It's all phony information. That there's somehow that the hurricanes are going to be stronger farther north, farther inland, and doubling the number of houses. So what a boon to the insurance industries, which I bet are owned and operated by the same CIA. And I don't know if you knew about this, but the CIA got into the insurance business back in the MENA, Arkansas days, where they would, this was part of the Clinton-Bush cocaine-running operation. Remember the South American and Central American connection, and then the Mideast connection of what the CIA was doing is they needed airplanes to move the drugs and armaments, the small arms, into Central America under Noriega, etc. And so what they were doing is they would buy two airplanes, or they'd go into these like dentist office or doctors who owned very capable two-engine airplanes, had a range of many thousands of miles. And they'd say, we know you're paying way too much for your airplane insurance, so we'll give you, you know, for half price, much better insurance. So the CIA goes into the insurance business. They sell the insurance to these doctors and dentists and professionals who have very capable airplanes. Then they go steal the plane and they replace it. Now what do they have? They've got two planes that are identical with the same call numbers. So they can fly out, they can fly out of the country, fly back in under the name of these doctors and dentists who don't know what's going on, and they are able to do the Iran-Contra. This is the whole Iran-Contra thing going on, where they're smuggling cocaine into the United States to Mena, Arkansas, and they're smuggling arms when they fly down to Central America. They're smuggling arms down to the resistance or whatever they were trying to arm down in Central America. But anyway, that's when the CIA got into the insurance business, and they've been expanding ever since. So now they can create a story saying that there's going to be hurricanes in farther northern states, make people pay for hurricane insurance who never would have had to ever pay for it again or prior, and make a lot of money off of basically false information. So anyway, you heard it first here. And at any rate, I'm going to... changing subjects a little bit here, on a little bit on the lighter side, the history of country western music. Now, turns out that some of my ancestors had something to do with this, but a lot of the Celtic instruments, of course, my ancestors were Celts from Ireland, and they got their origin literally from Norway and the Vikings who settled in Ireland. And that's where my family heritage is from. But the Celts developed a lot of musical instruments, and they were percussion type of instruments. And then they developed percussion instruments with strings. And that developed eventually into the, for example, the American banjo. Or the dulcimer or the hammer dulcimer, which are other variations of the of their combination of percussion and stringed instrument. And of course, the dulcimer is one of the primary country western instruments that also led into the using a bar, like a steel bar, what is known as the steel, a steel guitar, and where you have a bar and the strings are tuned melodically, as opposed to the typical guitar tuning of a Spanish type guitar, where you have the various chords that you play with your fingers. And contrary to that, a guitar with a slide uses a harmonic scale as the tuning, and so that if you can hold a bar there, you play an entire chord. You can change the chords and just by moving the bar, etc. So anyway, that's one of the, especially the early country western and music that had a lot of that, well, it still does. And then, of course, the fiddle, which was also a derivative of using the violin. It's just a manner of playing a violin. And then, like I say, the banjo, and then there's the four-string banjo, and then there's the five-string banjo that has a wooden reflector plate at the back, which I played as a youngster. I used to play the kind of the hillbilly music, you know, the what is known as Flat and Scruggs were very famous. If you ever watched the television show The Beverly Hillbillies, Flat and Scruggs were the group from the Smoky Mountains that played the, you know, that kind of hard-driving Smoky Mountain, Appalachian Mountain music. So anyway, that's one of the roots of country western music. Another root of country western music. So another aspect of country western music is Hawaiian music. And there again, you have what is known in Hawaiian music as slack key. It's a way of tuning and playing the guitar. And the real history of that is very interesting, in that the The original, back in the early days of Hawaii, of course, it was not discovered until like the 1850s or something, when Captain Cook stumbled upon it and going a little bit north from what the shipping routes had been, discovers Hawaii. And then very quickly, it became a hub for cattle raising because of the tremendous grazing areas, especially on the Big Island of Hawaii. But at any rate, they brought in Portuguese horsemen to manage the ranches there and the cattle. And of course, they rode horses, and they developed this style of Hawaiian music that you hear today. And of course, it was coupled with original Hawaiian music to give you that, the hula dance and there again, you have the barred guitar with steel strings that give you that Hawaiian music sound, and that was incorporated into country western music. And so it was really a derivative of a style of guitar where they brought the guitars over, the Spanish guitar, literally the Spanish guitar, and the Portuguese ranch hands did not know how to tune it, so they developed a style of tuning that is now common in Hawaii. Another form of that led out of the Appalachian type of instruments was called the dobro, and that has a steel plate which gives it a very distinctive vibrating overtone sound. And once again, that's a lot of times the dobro is played horizontally with a bar, or it can be played with fingers, or a dulcimer or a hammer dulcimer can be played with fingerings. And then there's the big board hammer dulcimer, which is very Celtic, and with the tremendous range of somebody that's really proficient. And those work well in the outdoors, where you have a big open area and play the hammer dulcimer. I'll just tell a little story. One time I was in the Smoky Mountains. This is when I was very young and I was camping out there, and that's before the national park really became anything, and I just could drive in with my vehicle and set up a camp. And I woke up in the morning, one morning, camping out, and it was in one of the valleys out. If you've ever been in the Smoky Mountains National Park, there's a big loop drive where you go around. And I was parked out in there, and the grass was very tall. Like, it must have been late in the summer. And so the grass was probably 3 feet tall. And out walking as the sun is starting to come up and the fog is lifting off the ground, there was a guy out there, full Scottish garb, playing a bagpipe. And this sound echoed off of the mountains that surround, like, the Cades Cove area, region of the Smoky Mountains, what is now the Smoky Mountains National Park. Just amazing. And so anyway, back to the country western music in the United States. So those were a couple of the sources of music. And then you have the actual country western ranches developing the music, the square dances, the fiddle, and then evolving into the combination of all of these, where you have the guitars and the early Grand Old Opry. When I was a young kid, I would go out to my friend's farm, and we would sit there at night, and we had this big old wooden AM radio, and what they would do is, because AM can broadcast very long distance, FM cannot. FM is not over the horizon. AM is over the horizon, very similar to shortwave. But they would, all of the local stations would shut down after midnight. They would go to sleep, basically. And so the FAA allowed these big stations out of Nashville, where my radio show emanates from, WWCR, which is the big shortwave station in Nashville. But anyway, the Nashville's AM stations would crank up the power, and we could hear that out on the farm in Minnesota. out in the rural districts. And so we'd turn up, we'd be listening to Johnny Cash and all of the old country western music. And all of those stars had their own particular style of music, which, of course, evolved into the music of today, where you have, Garth Brooks and stars like that who developed their own style, or all of the famous women singers. And that's one of the things where country western music had as many great women singer stars as men. In fact, sometimes the women were outshadowed the men. You know, so it was a really good mix of music, and it's something I grew up on along with many other kinds of music. But I just wanted to give a little bit of a, let me take a look at my notes here quick to make sure I didn't forget anything. The Irish played a big part in the early development of the instruments that were used eventually in country western music, so that the Appalachian music moved west and into the Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Marty Robbins, the northern Mexican style of music. And there was a lot of influence from the Spanish music that developed in Mexico. Of course, that came over with the Spanish cultures, the flamenco guitar, the very classical guitar playing that then eventually developed into a lot of the Latin music, which is another whole story of the development of Latin music. Hundreds of different styles of music from the coastal Caribbean cities down in through the mountainous regions or out in the plain regions, etc., of South America. Or if you go out through the Caribbean, the steel drums, the steel, one time it was in the Caribbean, it was in the Virgin Islands, and walking, I believe it was on St. John's, and walking all day around the island, at the nighttime coming into the little town there, and there was a marimba band of high school students. And they were performing, showing off their stuff, their music, and they were off to a national competition. And so they were, it was just amazing. This, and the guy that was in charge of the band there was just, he had these students. They had big ones, they had small ones, they had every size in between. And these kids were really disciplined. It was just absolutely incredible. But anyway, all of the different evolutionary styles of music. But I wanted to kind of talk a bit about the country western music and its roots coming from Ireland on the boats and then into Appalachia. With the thing about the dulcimers was that they were very easily made. They were very easily crafted from local materials. And so it was not a complicated process. And so those then evolved into the, like I say, the banjos and the dulcimers and the dubros and the slacky guitars and the steel guitars and on, as the steel strings came in, as opposed to the various early types of string that we used on wind in stringed instruments and like things like the dulcimers, etc. But anyway, very interesting sometimes just to study the music that the development of music. A couple of things I wanted to pick up from last week's show I talked about cyclonic storms, and there's one form of cyclonic storm that I believe I overlooked, and that was the if you have a volcano, and now I think it's in my Atlantis to Tesla book, it might be in the weather book, Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. It's one of those books, but I have a photograph of Mount, I think it's Vesuvius. It's one of the Italian volcanoes. And what's going on is it's active. It's not explosive active, but it has a lot of heat coming out of it. And what happens is that heat column rises straight up and it forms basically short circuits the vertical electric field coming up from the volcano. And so the picture is of an active tornado just sitting there right with its base in the caldera of the volcano. So anyway, that's something that I missed last week. And so because I was talking about all the different forms of cyclonic storms that are going on. Yeah, so that was one thing I missed. And then also I mentioned this. John Moore brought this up yesterday on his radio program, but that Putin is very much in control of the United States, and it's doing it through the woke program. And this is exactly how communism influences other countries. And so there's a couple things that's going on. He's just sucking the United States and Europe dry. Whether, you know, people think, oh, we're sending all this money to help Ukraine. Putin knows very well that all of that money going to Ukraine is pure corruption. All of the equipment that's being sent there is being sold off on the black market. And it's pure corruption. And so all he's doing is he could go in and win the Ukrainian war. He has 750,000 troops with full equipment sitting around the border of Ukraine. And they're going in and doing a little shelling back and forth in these towns that really been abandoned from the original fighting in Ukraine. But so this little thing is going on. But what it does is it keeps the United States basically depleting all of the supplies that Europe has, causing Europe in a time of great economic strife to turn around and buy a lot of military goods from the United States, especially expendable goods like rounds of ammunition. And, you know, and it's just like a cat that has a mouse that's dying and it's playing with it. And that's what Putin is doing to the United States. And the United States doesn't even know it. And the woke culture is basically completely, you know, following proper, you know, the exact formula for destruction of a country via communism. So anyway, and that is to, and then of course the government, the old Lenin phrase where you grind the public between the gristmill of taxation and inflation as a way to cause communism. So anyway, the Democrats have just bought onto this communist manifesto, hook, line, and sinker, and the United States is probably not going to be here in two more years at the rate it's going. I've got about a half a minute to go here, so I just want to remind you, see my new book on Amazon. It's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. It's only $13.95. Go buy that book and they send it to you. The thing is that will, as it sells more books, of course, it gets a higher rating. I will be putting most of my books up that will be up there very shortly, all of them within probably 6 months. And then also remind you the very good pricing on the water filters at the web pages. Go to the web pages, jmccsci.com, and then also the water filter page, jmccwaterfilters.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.